Ever catch yourself eating the same flavorless dinner 3 days in a row? Dreaming of something better? Well, HelloFresh is your guilt-free dream come true, baby. It's me, Keke Palmer. Let's wake up those taste buds with hot, juicy pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Mm. Hello Fresh. Stop dreaming of all the delicious possibilities and dig in at HelloFresh.com. Let's get this dinner party started.
My business used to be weighed down by the complexities of in-person payments. Then, Tap to Pay on iPhone and Stripe came along and changed everything. With Tap to Pay on iPhone and Stripe, I streamlined my payment process effortlessly. Now I can accept in-person, contactless payments right from my iPhone. No extra hardware required. What's truly remarkable is how I can cater to all of my customers' payment preferences. Whether they're using cards, Apple Pay, or other digital wallets, Tap to Pay on iPhone and Stripe ensure a smooth checkout experience every time. And it's not just me. Stripe helps businesses of all sizes, from local markets to global retailers, scale quickly and stay agile. To learn how Tap to Pay on iPhone and Stripe can help grow your revenue and reach, visit stripe.com/tapiphone.
Welcome to AI Named This Show. I'm Tasia Custodi.
And taking a quick sip of coffee, I'm Tristan Jutra.
Right before we went live, or perhaps we already were.
Super professional.
This is how we prove that we are indeed your human hosts. And on this week's episode, we're putting all our chips on the table. Get it, Tristan? Do you get it? And we're also examining a robot OpenAI mashup, plus talking thermodynamic computing. And I want to give a big hola to all of our listeners in Mexico. I love Mexico.
Specifically where, Tasia? Where were you?
She was in Cabo. No big deal. It was a glorious four nights of no work, Tristan. And now it's... I want to make a PSA. I'm physically here, but mentally, I'm still on a cliff's edge in Cabo San Lucas. It was my first time. It was great.
Now, how many people did you do like an impromptu live version of our podcast to while you were there? Just like, hey, have you heard the latest about AI? You know what my nunk Sam Altman's doing? Hey, have you heard about Google Gemini? You could have entertained all the folks.
Every time the band at the resort took a break, I was hot on that hot mic, let me tell you.
What's the deal with generative AI?
I really promote our show, TJ. You'd be proud.
Awesome. All right, Tasia, what's the deal with Mustafa Suleiman, who we spoke about months and months ago in some of our early episodes as someone who's a little concerned about AI safety, for one, but he's made a move.
Yes, as you may recall, he was the co-founder of Google DeepMind. He has now officially joined Microsoft as the CEO of its new AI division. So he's going to be overseeing consumer AI products like Copilot, one of our favorite naming conventions, Bing and Edge. So he's also going to be part of the senior leadership team, reporting to Satya Nadella, who's the CEO. And he's also, as I said, co-founded DeepMind in 2010, which Google acquired about 10 years ago now. But it is important to note that he had left Google in 2022 after serving kind of in various different roles. And the company continues to invest in AI, including partnerships with OpenAI and Mistral, and plans to integrate AI into Windows and Surface devices, with more details expected very soon at an upcoming AI event. So big news.
I think the funny thing is, from Microsoft saying the formation of a new AI team at Microsoft doesn't mean that Microsoft has forgotten about their other partnerships with OpenAI and Mistral, but that it'll continue to build AI infrastructure inclusive of custom systems and silicon work in support of OpenAI's foundation model roadmap, as well as build products on top of their foundation models. So why one of the reasons why some people are raising their eyebrows at this whole development is that Microsoft has poured a bunch of money into Suleiman's company. And some people think, well, that said company is not not performing as well as folks maybe had had figured. One of their apps was called Pi. They were trying to make more personal AI agents. And now that Microsoft is like has kind of like snapped him up, they're like, well, what about the rest of the company? So that's a little concerning. Are they going to be like hung out to dry, as it were? The other little angle to this is that you may recall that Microsoft's deal with OpenAI only extends to the point at which OpenAI reaches quote unquote AGI or artificial general intelligence, and Microsoft will have no right to any AGI tech that OpenAI develops. So it seems that in the last month or two, Microsoft has been hedging its bets a little bit, so it's not relying completely on OpenAI, and it's been investing in these other companies and people.
Dun, dun, dun.
Well, Satya Nadella, he's no dummy. So, but speaking of Microsoft, they had a Surface event Thursday, March 21st, the 2024 Microsoft Surface event. And they called it a new era of AI productivity. So, of course, there was indeed some AI news. They emphasized the integration of Copilot into Windows and Microsoft 365 for tasks like summarizing meetings and generating emails. They also mentioned some hardware like the Surface Pro 10, the Surface Laptop 6, as the, quote, first AI-powered Surface PCs for business. Well, you don't say. Featuring Intel Core Ultra processors and NPUs, neural processing units, for efficient AI task handling. We've seen this more and more lately from Apple calling the recent MacBook Airs the best computers for AI, and other PC hardware companies as well. So everyone's rushing to make sure that everyone knows that their hardware has these specialized chips for being able to do on-device AI processing. The Surface Pro 10 boasts a 50% performance increase over the 9 and offers anti-reflective, brighter display, all-day battery life, optional 5G wireless. Take note, Apple, we want built-in cellular connectivity in our freaking MacBooks. Anyhow, and AI-powered Windows Studio effects. They also showcase adaptive accessories and Copilot's accessibility features such as live transcription and text magnification to aid users with different needs. So a lot of AI, speed enhancements, and accessibility were the themes for the Microsoft Surface event. But the not to be outdone, there's some rumbling. We don't trade in rumors a whole lot here, but a couple of the other tech giants have been maybe courting a little, looking to maybe expand and deepen some of their existing relationships, Tejah.
Oh, we're going to spill the tea, honey. That's what we're going to do on this podcast now. Because Bloomberg's Mark Gurman is reporting that Apple has been talking to Google about bringing the company's AI engine Gemini to the iPhone. Tristan, my worlds are colliding. And I'm so excited. This better be true. Like, if this turns out to be a bunch of hogwash, I'm going to be upset because I feel like I've already gotten my hopes up. But a previous report from Gurman said Apple has big plans for their iOS 18 mobile platform, likely to be announced in June at some point this year during the Worldwide Developers Conference, so Apple's WWDC. And these plans, of course, as we've talked about, include new AI-related features. If the Apple-Google deal goes through, it's unlikely anything would even be announced before WWDC. But her hopes, they're already so high, Tristan. It'd be so great. Because it's like, when you're ingrained in that Apple ecosystem, but then, like I've told you, Gemini is fantastic. And if that could be the go-to for Apple, because I thought we would see a partnership the other way. I thought Apple was going to go with either their own or maybe like a ChatGPT partnership. So this to me was a shocker and I had to spill that tea.
Well, it sounds like Apple is having discussions sort of around the industry, seeing who they might vibe with, so to speak.
They're courting.
Now, of course, Apple traditionally has had a certain amount of NIH, or not invented here, syndrome. They have been working on quite a lot of stuff internally, both LLMs and image generation models and whatnot, lots of open source efforts. That's often a sign that you're a little behind. Throw it to open source and get other folks to help. And the thing is that there may be a bit of a twist to this, in that Apple may go with someone like Google for the cloud-based general LLM smarts, but then stick with their own secret sauce for the on-device stuff as they continue to add specialized chips to their devices. They would have Siri, I'm assuming they still call it Siri, as long as that brand hasn't been tarnished too much by its, you know, mm-hmm. its a perceived decline, at least in comparison to other smart assistants, AI-based and otherwise. So Apple may still want to control the stuff that's going on the phone, and maybe you could be using Siri to control phone functions and, you know, do some basic stuff that to do with your data, because Apple is restricted by its own, you know, self-stated privacy commitments. But if you're doing things like image generation or any other generative AI, things that require the larger, more general purpose LLMs, like those produced by Google or OpenAI or others, then, you know, we might be seeing a bit of this hybrid approach. Now, folks might also recall that this would not be new, this kind of partnership for Apple and Google, because they currently have a search deal where Google is the default search engine for Apple's Safari web browsers across its entire device line. I think now that includes Siri too. Siri used to default for Bing for searches, but I believe Google eventually scooped that up as well. Microsoft was tired of playing second fiddle and spending billions for maybe not the return that they were hoping. And they reportedly took some of that money and put it into their own R&D efforts. But it's obviously so valuable to Google to have that default preferential treatment for their search engine, especially nowadays with more and more competition coming from AI, that it's reported to be worth upwards of $18 billion per year or so. We've heard between 10 and 20, but a lot of the reports have been coalescing around about $18 billion per year. So, and of course, that's come under scrutiny from regulators as well, because people are, you know, claiming it could be a little bit of some kind of a duopoly in there. Of course, in the US, in the EU, Apple's being forced to provide options for default web browsers. They may be pushed to provide upfront options for default search engines as well. So do Apple and Google want to risk further scrutiny from regulators at home or abroad for yet another potentially multi-billion dollar deal sort of arrangement? We shall see. WWDC, like you said, in June, hopefully should reveal some details there. But not to be outdone, we've got your anti-nunk, Elon Musk.
Definitely my anti-nunk. And another one of the Groks.
The Grok with a K. So you might have heard that Elon Musk is suing OpenAI for a breach of a non-existent contract for basically turning itself into closed AI. Elon even promised to drop the lawsuit if they renamed themselves that. So because you may recall, Elon was one of the early people involved with OpenAI. He even claims to have invented the name for it. He got a lot of the funding and whatnot. Then sort of stepped aside when there were some perceived conflicts of interest. They were developing AI stuff at Tesla, and maybe some difference of opinion in vision and the like. Since then, it seems that he has been more openly critical of what OpenAI has been doing, especially given their original quasi-philanthropic mission to, you know, develop AI in an open way for the benefit of humanity. And then, of course, with the billions and billions of dollars from Microsoft, now it's like, okay, so how philanthropic is this really? And now your Microsoft has gone from zero to 60 in the course of just about 18 months or so, with all that they benefited from that OpenAI partnership. So putting his grok where his mouth is, so to speak, Elon has announced that his company XAI has made its AI chatbot Groks base model weights and network architecture available on GitHub, which is the platform for open source development. Developers can go and access code there and both retrieve and submit code for various open source projects. And developed at a lightning pace so far, Grok is designed for coding generation, creative writing, and answering questions without being fine-tuned for specific dialogues. And it can also be a little spicy, as Elon loved to promote back when it was revealed publicly. So the move to open source Grok contrasts with other companies like OpenAI and others, which have more restrictive licensing and aligns with Musk's advocacy for open source AI after acquiring Twitter. You know, he's claiming to do things for the benefit of mankind and whatnot, truly. And so you think about the whole Twitter acquisition, you know, he believes in free speech, when it suits him, at least, the whole thing with SpaceX becoming a multiplanetary species. So I think there's something to be said that one can quibble on the details, but it's hard to deny that he doesn't have at least some kind of vision. Whether or not one might agree with all the details of that vision, of course, is up for argument. So the initial testing of Grok back in the fall suggested it was less impressive than existing chatbots, of course, lacking distinctiveness and humor, supposedly, or just maybe, you know, humor is a taste thing, in comparison to competitors, some of which have taken a closed source path, like we've mentioned. So maybe making Grok open source will help Grok's help it catch up to Google Gemini or GPT-4. Maybe we'll see. I mean, they got up and running pretty quickly. Let's see how much this open source angle will help them further accelerate development. Can they catch up to OpenAI?
I feel like there's so much catch up at this point.
Well, it's still early days, right? Like,
very early days.
Yeah.
But
like, if you launch an e-commerce website in 1996, is that too late? What about 98? Is that still too late? What about 2000? Is that still too late? So, but OpenAI was in the news a little bit too.
Yeah, well, I mean, with how fast everything's moving, my nunk actually says that GPT-4, which as we know right now is the latest AI model from OpenAI, isn't as impressive as everybody thinks it is. So in a recent interview with Lex Fridman, he said, and I quote, "I think it kind of sucks." I'm going to add context here, and here's what he added, quote, "I think it's an amazing thing, but relative to where we need to get to and where I believe we will get to at the time of like GPT-3, people were like, ooh, this is amazing. This is like marvel of technology. And it is, it was, but now we have GPT-4 and look at GPT-3 and you're like, that's unimaginably horrible." So basically what he's saying is he knows what's coming. Mm-hmm. And when you see how fast this is going, GPT-4 stinks. Stinky stinks to high heaven. Now, when it comes to the rumored GPT-5, Altman did not share a date for us of like when we could expect this. And in fact, he just says that they're releasing an amazing model this year, but they don't even know what they'll call it. So we will see what that looks like, Tristan, and the capabilities and the name. Because we don't know. But I get what he's saying. It's like, how quaint. Like, if you went back to 3 now, GPT-3, you'd be like, oh. Even though it wasn't that long ago, you'd be like, this is so quaint. It really can't do much of any, you know, anything as useful as what we're seeing now, is his point.
Especially when you go back to stuff that had been leaked about GPT-2, which wasn't publicly accessible per se, but I mean, it was wild at the time. But then GPT, you know, ChatGPT powered by GPT-3 launched about a year and a half ago, and people were like, people's minds were blown, and then they started to see its limitations pretty quickly. Then within a few months, GPT-4 came out. They enhanced 3 to 3.5 turbo, so it was faster and a bit smarter. But 4 was just, you know, up to 15 times better, according to, you know, certain metrics. But now, with the competition from Google and, you know, Mistral and, you know, what Perplexity's doing and what Anthropic is doing with Claude, you know, I think the latest version of Claude, some people are, like we discussed previously, is better than GPT-4 in some respects. So there's a bit of a meme online. People are like going refreshing Twitter like all the time. It's like GPT-5, when's it coming?
Yes.
We could very well see a GPT-4.5 first, like we saw with 3.5 and 4, or maybe they'll do them simultaneously and have 4.5 as a cheaper version or free version, and then 5 as the premium version. Or maybe they'll add an even higher tier, you know, follow the Google path of just having like all the versions. Be careful. and maybe some new names while we're at it too.
We wait with bated breath. And while we do, Tristan, I would like to introduce you and talk to you about my new best friend. It's a robot.
So long, Sam.
No, Sam is still my nunk, but I have a new best friend, and it's a robot called Figure One. So go figure. And that's the name of this week's episode. So there's a new demo of my new best friend, Figure One. So this is a robot from Figure, an AI robotics company. Figure, by the way, is backed by Microsoft and NVIDIA. And this demo is wild. So it shows Figure One. So we're talking full-on robot. We're not talking about a chatbot. We're talking about a robot that is dexterous and moves and can speak to you. And in this demo, Figure One is having a full conversation with a human while completing tasks and different requests. So in the demo, we saw Figure One decipher what's in front of it on a table. And at one point, it hands off an apple. It cleans up trash. It puts away the dishes. I have a few thoughts on this, but the thing that was crazy to me was that there's even some us and like it talks just like I did, just stuttered right there. It talks in that way. So it thinks about things for a bit first. Like, you know, this guy asks it to basically put the dishes away. He could have put the dishes away quicker than what the robot does because he has to wait for the robot to understand, decipher. However, that's not the point. The point is it's very cool because it is showing it can understand and decipher real world what is around it in context of what he is referring to in that time. And just the conversational tone of Figure One blew me away. We're going to put this video in the show notes because it was only a few minutes. I mean, and it's honestly the best we've seen yet. Remember when we watched the other videos of robots like putting, was it peanut butter on toast or whatever? This is like next level dexterity, understanding gripping and grip strengths and how to grip different items and deciphering a food item from a non-edible item. Incredible. It's incredible.
And this is a classic example of the power of multimodal AI, which OpenAI and others have been working on, Google as well. And so it's seeing its environment around it. It's hearing what the human is saying and parsing that, understanding that, and then looking around and trying to see what, you know, in the context of its environment, what it is that the human is requesting. One of the things that the human asked was, okay, from what you see in front of me, can you give me something to eat? And so he saw on the table, there was the apple and a couple of cups and the dish rack and some plates, and he picked up the apple and gave that to him. So figured that part out. The language, the pauses, the ums and ahs, that is currently there in OpenAI's, you know, ChatGPT. So the when you're using the voice capability of that. So when you put that in a humanoid form, mm-hmm. it's even more endearing. Now it doesn't have eyes or anything. It's got a little screen on its face that shows what it's processing and thinking and whatnot. And the pauses, I mean, that's what I appreciated about the demo is they didn't try to speed things up at all, Google, and they just let it take its time because we know that these things are going to get faster, right? This is the worst this will ever be. This is a refrain we're hearing more and more.
And it's very good.
And so we're seeing, like you mentioned, the dexterity. There's a whole lot of stuff going on. We've had the benefit of a decade plus of amazing demos from Boston Dynamics with robots doing backflips and the balance and all that. And there, to be fair, there are a number of robotics manufacturers working on these problems. Even Tesla with Optimus. We saw a demo from it a few months ago when it was sorting different colored objects and whatnot and writing them when they'd fallen over. So there is a number of companies working on this sort of stuff. But when you put it together with the AI, so this isn't something that's remote controlled, and this is it can move on its own, so it's got the autonomy, but then it also has the language skills and the understanding of its environment. This is where the magic really starts to happen. So, of course, there's all sorts of potential industrial applications. One could see this for potentially home care applications. We've seen in Japan, there's a lot of effort into elder care because there's lack of population in the younger generations to help with that sort of thing. So, yeah, robots are where it's at. I mean, that's the dream I've had in my Twitter profile for years and years, friend to robots, because when they become strong enough to crush us and take over, want them to be friendly. Don't crush me like an apple. But I think one of the tests in my mind is like tying shoelaces.
Oh.
Right? Because that's tricky. That's a thing like you get get kids to do. It takes practice, right? But they're going to get there eventually. Imagine threading a needle. That'll be another milestone as well. Then combined again with all the understanding. So there's the dexterity, there's the vision, there's the language, all comes together.
In the market for investment-worthy bags, watches, and fine jewelry, Rebag is the answer. Rebag is a luxury resale platform where each piece is carefully inspected by experts to ensure quality and authenticity. Use Rebag to buy and sell finds from the world's top brands, including Louis Vuitton, Chanel, and Cartier. Head to Rebag.com to get 5% off your first purchase with code REBAGNEW. Shop today at Rebag.com. That's REBAG.com. And use promo code REBAGNEW for 5% off your first purchase.
My business used to be weighed down by the complexities of in-person payments. Then, Tap to Pay on iPhone and Stripe came along and changed everything. With Tap to Pay on iPhone and Stripe, I streamlined my payment process effortlessly. Now I can accept in-person, contactless payments right from my iPhone. No extra hardware required. What's truly remarkable is how I can cater to all of my customers' payment preferences, whether they're using cards, Apple Pay, or other digital wallets, Tap to Pay on iPhone and Stripe ensure a smooth checkout experience every time. And it's not just me. Stripe helps businesses of all sizes, from local markets to global retailers, scale quickly and stay agile. To learn how Tap to Pay on iPhone and Stripe can help grow your revenue and reach, visit stripe.com/tapiphone.
So speaking of robots, There's been so much going on, Tasia.
So much NVIDIA news, by the way.
Exactly. Well, they had, all week they've been having their event going. Jensen Wong, he had a keynote address, and they rented out the arena with like 11,000 person capacity. He's like a rock star. I mean, some of these AI people are becoming rock stars now. And they had a whole lot of announcements there. We're only going to be able to cover so much, but we'll just speed run through some of these. Mm-hmm. One, NVIDIA unveiled a new foundational model called Project Groot, GR00T, which stands for Generalist Robot 00 Technology. So not really anything to do with Groot in the Marvel Cinematic Universe, but you have something with a similar name and it gains a little bit of mind share. It kind of sticks in people's head. So it's aimed at advancing the development of humanoid robots, like we were just talking about, for industrial applications. So it was announced at this event, at the keynote at GTC 24, NVIDIA's event, and it promises to make robots smarter by enabling them to understand natural language and learn from human actions. So part of that is seeing what humans are doing and then being able to replicate those actions. And these are the kinds of things that a lot of these robotics developers are working on right now. So to support Groot, and this is where NVIDIA has a bit of an advantage, NVIDIA has developed something called Jetson Thor. Again, so we're with the pop culture, the Jetsons, we get the old cartoon, futuristic cartoon. We got Thor in there. So we've got some ancient Viking mythology and or Marvel Cinematic Universe stuff as well. So Jetson Thor is a computing system with a GPU based on the NVIDIA Blackwell architecture. And we'll get to what that means in just a little bit. And it's designed to deliver 800 teraflops of AI performance. We're going to talk more about flops a little bit later as well, which is crucial for running multimodal, there's that word again, generative AI models like Groot. And alongside Project Groot, NVIDIA has also upgraded its Isaac robotics platform. Robotics platform. Isaac, the name of one of my cats we just got a couple months ago. This includes new collections of pre-trained models, libraries, and reference hardware to enhance the learning and efficiency of robotic arms, making them more viable for industrial use. So not so sure that NVIDIA is going to be making a ton of robots themselves, but they're going to be, they're developing the hardware, the chips, the computing platform that can help power this. They've got the development environment. People have heard of things like CUDA, for example, CUDA, which, you know, currently used in for talking to chips and developing games with them. So they've got a lot of this stuff, a lot of this foundation already laid.
I really should have invested in NVIDIA.
Yeah, right. I think they recently passed $2 trillion market cap.
I'm kicking myself.
So we're just going to take a quick side detour because it's relevant, and then we're going to come back to some of the specific NVIDIA announcements. And that is one of the applications, not so much for the robotics necessarily. At this point, we're talking still like just general chatbot type agents, but you could see how we could get into this kind of smarts into robotic form eventually. And so tell us about NVIDIA wanting to replace nurses, Tasia.
Yes, they just announced a collaboration with Hippocratic AI just this past Monday, a healthcare company that offers generative AI nurses who work for just $9 an hour. So Hippocratic promotes how it can undercut real human nurses who can cost up to like $90 an hour with its cheap AI agents that offer medical advice to patients over video calls in real time. NVIDIA is powering Hippocratic's real-time responses over video calls. And in a demo posted by NVIDIA, a semi-human looking AI agent named Rachel verbally instructs a patient on how to take penicillin. The agent then tells the patient it's going to report back all this information to her real human doctor. So it's like a liaison, if you will. Rachel is just one of many AI nurses that the healthcare providers can choose from. And that's according to information from Hippocratic's, like one of their product pages. The AI nurses range in specialties from things like colonoscopy screening to breast cancer care management, all for less than minimum wage. And Hippocratic really is directly promoting how it can undercut that living wage of real nurses, and like they're saying this is a positive. So, you know, I think it was like 32,000 nurses in the States in 2023 went on strike last year, and so, you know, nurses are dealing with a lot of worker shortages, and that even predates a lot of the COVID-19 pandemic stuff. So Hippocratic is saying this is what they want to address. Yes.
Oh. I mean, we got farm equipment to help reduce the amount of manual labor. I mean, you still need manual labor for certain types of farming. So this is another type of progress, which will obviously cause some disruption in the short to medium term. But in the long term, if these things get smart enough, if they don't make egregious errors, hallucinate, et cetera, if well-trained.
Correct.
I mean, you can think of like nurses' hotlines, for example, which, you know, we are calling in now. And it's of course, nice to talk to a regular human being. But as time goes on, we may get more and more comfortable with the sort of advice we get from very natural sounding agents, whether it's via text, via voice, or via a digital avatar, like we see in the video. We'll include the link for this from this story as well from Gizmodo.
Well, it's going to be interesting to see like how much they actually can do. Like, is it just going to be kind of like a liaison? Because to be clear, they cannot make, the AI nurses do not make a diagnosis. So the AI healthcare agent is what they're calling them. It's trained to engage a human when appropriate. So,
smart.
Yeah. And Hippocratic's name is inspired by the Hippocratic Oath, in case you were wondering, which is the code of ethics that physicians adhere to, meaning first, do no harm. So it's kind of interesting to see like, well, do no harm, sure, but can you do me any good? Like, I don't know what, like cool, but if you can't, because I'm thinking of like right now, like telemedicine, and I had to do like a telemedicine call during COVID, which was honestly so convenient. from the comfort of my own home, but like that was to a real doctor who had to make a diagnosis of what was going on, like seeing me over a video call. So I don't know. I think it might, it could speed up maybe a lot of the initial intake perhaps. And then assuming it's accurately feeding the information to your real human healthcare provider. But it will, as we say on this podcast, it's some more let's wait and see. But just so you know, this was just one announcement from NVIDIA's 2024 GTC conference. And Hippocratic says that its AI nurses have been tested by thousands of human nurses and hundreds of human doctors. And the company's technology is being tested by over 40 healthcare providers around the country right now as we speak. So we'll see, Tristan. I just want to know how helpful it actually will be.
Yeah. I mean, it's not, it's a little more high stakes than screwing up your homework, right?
Correct.
Your English paper. I, for one, can't wait until they get this in Android form, as we've discussed, and then they can take those colonoscopy screenings one step further and actually do the job. Anyhow.
If you just had to hold it close to the surface. I won't finish that thought. That'd be really cool.
Watch
like our temperature
space.
Sensors.
Exactly. Okay, so as promised, there are a few other NVIDIA announcements at their GTC 2024 event. And to help power things like AI nurses and these next generation androids, NVIDIA has announced a new platform, as we alluded to, called Blackwell. Why is it? There's so many things like this black. Remember, there's Blackwater, the military contractor during the Iraq War. And then we've got these high flying finance companies like Blackstone.
Yes,
and BlackRock.
I was just going to say that.
And now we've got Blackwell. I mean, it's cool sounding. And you like those hard consonant sounds because they make things sound badass, but also slightly sinister. Anyhow.
Yes.
Blackwell has chips that are, the Blackwell platform features chips that are between 7 and 30 times faster than NVIDIA's current H100 chips and use 25 times less power. So it's not just about the how fast these things are, but it's how much energy they use. Of course, there's energy implications for all of these things. And that's something that chip makers have been working on for decades. You want to get your computing power up while your actual electrical power usage down. So they offer 20 petaflops of performance, which is a significant upgrade from the H100's mere 4 petaflops, thanks to its 208 billion transistors. So for those playing at home, a petaflop is 1,000 trillion or 1 quadrillion floating point operations per second. So that's where the flop comes from, the floating point operation. In computing, floating point operations per second is a measure of computing performance. So yeah, this is 1 quadrillion floating point operations per second. So a bit faster than your Commodore 64.
Just a skosh.
The chips are highly sought after with delivery wait times reaching up to 11 months and are considered a status symbol among tech companies, of course. Have you got your Blackwell yet? CEOs from major companies like OpenAI, Microsoft, and Tesla have praised NVIDIA's hardware because maybe they want to get to the front of the line. With Elon Musk saying, there's currently nothing better than NVIDIA hardware for AI.
Ooh.
And NVIDIA has really taken the lead. They're really owning this moment and they're just doubling down to these big events, plowing money into R&D and just increasing their dominance. And again, we should have invested a long time ago.
I could kick myself. I mean, that's an endorsement, Tristan. Jeez. You need to tell me the things to invest in before they become really big. So tell me what the next NVIDIA is going to be.
Sure.
So I can get in on the ground floor.
Get the crystal ball. But they're not alone. Intel's playing catch up. We touched on them a week or two ago as well. But there's a wee update on the Intel front, Tasia.
Yeah. And I'm going to bring you this story that's a little bit closer to home. I'm so excited. Mr. President Joe Biden, he was here in Arizona, and he just awarded Intel a $20 billion in grants and loans just this past yesterday or 2 days ago or three, I don't know what day we're on, but on Wednesday. And this marks the U.S. government's largest outlay to subsidize leading-edge chip production and supercharging the company's domestic semiconductor chip output. In case you didn't know, Tristan, the Intel plant, I believe, is in Chandler, Arizona. So it's pretty close to my backyard, just so you know. He was here. I'm just going to say he was in my backyard because it sounds cooler. But he announced this preliminary agreement, which is for $8.5 billion in grants and up to $11 billion in loans for Intel here in Chandler, where some of the funding is going to be used to build two new factories and then modernize the existing one. And he said that the pandemic helped cause an acute shortage of semiconductors, which forced factories to shut, prices to rise. And then he says he's since been determined to invest in America. It sounds like somebody's campaigning.
What year is it again? 2024.
Are we in an election year? Interesting. So here's a little quote from President Biden. He says, quote, "We will enable advanced semiconductor manufacturing to make a comeback here in America after 40 years.
Here.
And so Commerce Department Secretary Gina Raimondo on Tuesday called it one of the largest investments ever in U.S. semiconductor manufacturing. And she said that the administration hopes to increase the U.S. share of advanced chip production from 0% to 20% by 2030 through this subsidy program. And just so you know, Tristan, because I know you're going to be interested, was traffic a nightmare the last 2 days in Arizona? Was I confused as to why certain portions of the highway were blocked off with police, yet there were no signage? Yes, I was, until I Googled and realized the president was here.
What's with all the black SUVs and helicopters?
He had to get from one end to the other end of the county. And that's what my assumption is of why traffic was a shite show. Anyhow, it's great for Arizona and it's great for America, Tristan.
F yeah. Well, it's about time. It's a shame that where so much of this technology has been invented over the last several decades in, no small part thanks to assistance from various government administrations and the like, through, a variety of programs. And we've seen, remember companies like Fairchild and of course, Intel, Motorola, Texas Instruments, there's like quite a long legacy, but a lot of the said organizations kind of outsource the actual fabrication of their chips to other jurisdictions where it was cheaper. But now with the geopolitical situation and so much riding on Taiwan, for example, that gets a little dicier, and it's good to maybe control a bit more of the technology that one's nation had a large part in developing in the first place. So,
and that's pretty much what Biden said, that we invented it, we should be manufacturing it here too.
I mean, maybe I should run for president.
I mean, you said it so eloquently. And you're like half his age.
Now, the question is,
dun, dun, what, dun.
He's over 100?
No, I know. I said, I was being generous to you. Tristan, age yourself down.
Thank you. So, now
he looks great for 100, by the way.
So, one of the questions is investing in sort of traditional companies and traditional processes like Intel and what they would be producing. Does that make sense, or does it make sense to be paying attention to startups like Xtropic, who are talking about ushering a thermodynamic future? Okay, this is going to get
a little weird. What does this even mean, Tristan?
Exactly.
Oh, boy.
So this is going to be pretty high level. We're going to include links to, there's a 10-minute video on this, and then there's also like an hour and 10-minute video on this as well, where they get into it with the co-founders of this company. But Xtropic is finally sharing a little more information about what they're building, which is a full-stack hardware platform to harness matter's natural fluctuations as a computational resource for generative AI. So we're not just going down to the metal. We're going beyond, we're going inside the metal.
What does it all mean, Basil?
Exactly. So they've developed a prototype superconducting processor. So again, whenever you hear the word superconducting, you got to remember that in order to maintain the right conditions for superconducting, you need to get things very cold. So let's see how this stuff scales, right? Mm. That's been a challenge for this kind of stuff. So they are developing this for AI acceleration, promising significant speed and energy efficiency improvements over traditional digital processors. They're calling it thermodynamic computing, which is a novel computing paradigm that mimics biological processes running AI algorithms as a physics-based process, which is more suitable, they say, for AI tasks than current digital processors. All right. Okay. So their technology includes nano fabricated chips with with Josephine junctions for superconducting properties. Now, I had looked up earlier what a Josephine junction actually was.
Yeah, because I was just going to ask you, what is a Josephine junction and why does it have this name and why am I always so confused? These are the questions we may or may not answer on today's episode.
So, what is a Josephine junction, you might ask? Well, it's an electronic fast-switching device made of two layers of superconducting metal separated by a thin layer of insulator, and it allows low current to flow, but increased current causes the insulator to block the flow. So this device exhibits the Josephine effect, producing a supercurrent that flows continuously without any voltage applied. So you can see some implications for energy use there. The Josephine effect is named after physicist Brian Josephine, who predicted the mathematical relationships for the current and voltage across such junctions. These junctions have significant applications in quantum mechanical circuits, superconducting qubits.
Oh boy.
So that's related to quantum computing, and of course, digital electronics. So that's what a Josephine junction is. Let's continue.
Which, by the way, answered all my questions. Thank you very much.
So the team comprises experts from various fields, including physics, as mentioned, and AI. These individuals have prior experience at leading tech companies such as Google, Alphabet, AWS, Meta, IBM, NVIDIA, and Xanadu. I'm not familiar with Xanadu, as well as top academic institutions. Some key members of the team joined Extropic following a scientific exodus from the field of quantum computing. Quantum computing, it's just around the corner. Of course, it's been just around the corner for the last decade. There's a lot of obstacles in scaling that stuff up, and maybe some people have gotten a little frustrated in its lack of progress, but it's still a thing, still being worked on. But of course, there are some learnings from that could be applied to maybe non-strictly quantum computing environments. So they've got $14.1 million in seed funding, and they claim to be revolutionizing AI acceleration and preparing both the hardware and the software solutions for what they're calling energy-based models, or EBM. So like I said, we're going down to the metal and further, inside the metal, and they claim to be able to speed things up by I think one of the claims was 100x. So speed is important for this. And again, it's another case of watch this space.
We will link to, as Tristan said, the different videos. Some are long, some are short. They were all interesting and confounding at the same time. So if you have a bit more time, we will link to those in the show notes. And you can go learn all more about this thermodynamic computing.
And finally, we might be able to escape the restrictions of Moore's Law. I mean, the hypothetical restrictions of Moore's Law, where basically you have, the amount of transistors in a given space doubling over every 18 months. But we've been starting to run against the laws of physics. They can only get things so small because there's only so much smaller you can get than an atom. But then when we're talking about quantum mechanics and different mechanisms, then perhaps this is what gets us to the next level. Again, they got to ship it. It's a lot of talk right now. People might have accusations of vaporware. So it's good to be skeptical. The interviews are interesting. They seem smart, but I'm not qualified to comment on the veracity of their claims. So the proof will be, in the pudding.
Can actually,
and the practicality. If we're talking superconductors, Well, I mean, sure, you got a lot of people like who are water cooling their PCs, for example. I mean, in industrial applications or in data center applications, cooling is a different scale. But they're not getting things to anywhere near absolute zero in those applications. So we shall see. But it's exciting. I mean, we have these supposed restrictions or plateaus, the 4-minute mile being one. That was exceeded or that was beat here in the Vancouver, BC, Roger Bannister at Empire Stadium. So sometimes it's just a new mental model, a new performance model, a new technological model, and it can get us to our glorious AI future where the robots do our dishes and eventually enslave us. Oh. The end.
Yeah. And on that note... We need you to help us with our AI future as well, because we want to thank you, first of all, for listening to AI Name This Show. Tristan, did you know this is our 30th episode?
What?
I feel like
it's
that's
time for a midlife crisis.
I feel like that's a thing, but just because it's a nice, solid, even number. So thank you for doing this with me. And thank you to the listeners for listening for 30 episodes now, or however many long you've been here for. And if you are listening on like an Apple Podcasts, we would absolutely love for you to leave us a review, give us some feedback, tell us what your favorite part of the show was, and share this show out with others, because it really does help everybody discover and really just affirm our AI future, Tristan. So thank you all so much for listening to episode 30 of AI Named This Show.
AI and goodbye.
How many episodes till Apple tells us to stop using that?
Cease and desist.
My business used to be weighed down by the complexities of in-person payments. Then, Tap to Pay on iPhone and Stripe came along and changed everything. With Tap to Pay on iPhone and Stripe, I streamlined my payment process effortlessly. Now I can accept in-person, contactless payments right from my iPhone. No extra hardware required. What's truly remarkable is how I can cater to all of my customers' payment preferences. Whether they're using cards, Apple Pay, or other digital wallets, Tap to Pay on iPhone and Stripe ensure a smooth checkout experience every time. And it's not just me. Stripe helps businesses of all sizes, from local markets to global retailers, scale quickly and stay agile. To learn how Tap to Pay on iPhone and Stripe can help grow your revenue and reach, visit stripe.com/tapiphone.
Hi, I'm Daniel, founder of Pretty Litter. Cats and cat owners deserve better than any old-fashioned litter. That's why I teamed up with scientists and veterinarians to create Pretty Litter. Its innovative crystal formula has superior odor control and weighs up to 80% less than clay litter. Pretty Litter even monitors health by changing colors to help detect early signs of potential illness. It's the world's smartest kitty litter.
Go to prettylitter.com and use code ACAST for 20% off your first order and a free cat toy. Terms and conditions apply. See site for details.